here's the main thing that I want you to keep in mind, okay? We're talking about the symbolism of numbers. We're talking about the book of prophecy to begin with, Revelation, being that you have to remember that the numbers in Revelation are purely symbolical. They are not intended to be literal. And the reason you've got to keep that in mind is because if you try to interpret those numbers literally using the real numbers, then you will not understand it properly, because they were never intended to be used as real numbers in that way. And trying to figure out times and dates and all those kinds of things, you are not going to come up with a proper understanding. So you've got to, again, that's why I gave you this handout here on the symbolism. The key word in that being symbolism, okay? Keep that in mind whenever you're studying this, and it will help you to be able to get perhaps a better understanding and not get confused by trying to say, oh, well, this number and so forth. So please, keep that in mind. Now, last time when we began talking about these different theories of interpretation. That's why I want to pick up with this again. And we're going to start at the beginning of this section talking about these different theories of interpretation. One of the things that you have to understand in any book that you are interpreting, okay, when you're interpreting the Bible, and it's true really with a lot of different things, if you want to interpret the Constitution of the United States, what are some of the principles that you have to keep in mind in trying to understand and interpret the Constitution? Okay, the time and the setting that it was in, right? Okay, what else? Okay, the meaning of that time, and specifically how the people of that time understood, right? Okay, so in other words, what you have to look at is the context that it was originally written in. And when you do that, then you're going to be able to have a better understanding of what its real intended purpose was. If you take it out of that context, then sometimes you lose, some of the real meaning and power of it and so forth. Well, the Bible is the same way. The best way to understand the Scriptures is to go back to the original time, the original intent of the author, the original audience. That's why, when we study these different books, that's why I take a lot of time to talk about the authorship and the recipients and, the audience and all those kinds of things in the setting, because when you understand that, then it helps you to place it in a proper context to understand what it's really intended to be. Without that, then we just kind of take the context and make one up, so to speak, and try to fit it wherever we think we might be able to fit it best. And when we do that, we're typically not going to get a proper understanding of it. So that's true also, especially we're talking about a book like Revelation. We're talking about prophecy. We're talking about apocryphal writings here. You need to understand it in the context of the time that it was written and what was going on. Okay? So let's talk about these different theories of interpretation. And the last time we started talking about these, one of the things that we talked about was the idea that, there are a lot of different theories. We're going to talk about some of the main different theories that people use to understand Revelation. But the problem with a lot of these different theories is that because they're not based, on some sound thinking, then the outcome of the interpretations is going to be skewed, all right? So in other words, if you start at the wrong place and decide from there, here's the map we're going to use to try to figure out how to get where we're going, you're using the wrong map, then you're not going to get to the place where you really want to go. Does that make sense? And that's what a lot of people have done with Revelation. They're using the wrong map. They're starting at point A, but they've got the wrong map to get to where they want to go and try to understand it. And then they come up with all kinds of different ideas and conclusions and so forth. So what we're going to do in this section is look at some different theories. We're going to look at, here's a theory. Here's some objections to this theory and why we don't think it's, the best theory to use in terms of interpreting this. So let's start out with looking at, talk about this, the futurist method. Okay, this is one we talked about last time, so let's just kind of run back through this. This particular view, the futurist method, views the book almost wholly eschatological, that is, dealing with the events at the end of the world. All right? Eschatology is literally the study of last things. That's what the word means. Okay? And so those who look at things from this particular method look at it upon this book as a volume of unfulfilled prophecy. In other words, the book of Revelation in its entirety, as far as they're concerned, for the most part, it is still yet to be fulfilled. All right? So they look at all the prophecies of Revelation, and they're still looking for the point or points in time when these prophecies that John wrote about way, way back when are going to be fulfilled. All right? Everybody understand that so far? Okay, now, what's the objection? Why would that really not be a very sound theory or method of interpretation here? Okay? First of all, it's inconsistent with John's statement that he makes in chapter 1 and verse 1 that John wrote about these events that are going to what? Soon take place. Okay? So now, we have to understand again, when John says these events are soon to take place, does that necessarily mean all of those events are going to soon take place? Not necessarily. But some of them were going to soon take place. Okay? Soon rather than 2,000 or 4,000 or whatever it's going to be years down the road. Okay? So to say that, you know, it's been 2,000 years and none of those things that John wrote about back then have even taken place yet, well, that's problematic because it leaves Revelation out, okay, of the hands and really the needs of the people of its original audience when you do that. What's the point for them? Other than someone might argue and say, well, and I think this is a legitimate argument you need to be aware of. Someone saying, well, but they didn't know that it's going to be 2,000 years at least. They believed, firmly were convinced that the Lord was going to come back in their lifetime. Again, that's a legitimate argument. But for us now to look back and say, yeah, but it never really applied to any of that anyway. You see the problem with that. Okay? John wrote a book and gave it to them. And it was something that they couldn't relate to and really had no, it had no purpose for them whatsoever if it wasn't going to occur until at least now and then whatever more time we have. Anybody following me? This method then reserves the meaning of Revelation for those who will be around only when the end comes. The ones who are actually going to experience the things that Revelation talks about, again, in its entirety, all right, they're going to be the ones who are still around when the Lord does come back again. Again, it doesn't apply to anybody else, all the way back to John's original audience. So again, that kind of thinking, you have to go back and ask, so what was the purpose of John giving it to those Christians, you know, back there in 90 AD or whenever it was? If it didn't apply to them, wasn't going to have any impact on them whatsoever. The continuous historical method. Alright? This method looks upon Revelation as the forecast and symbols of the history of the church. In other words, Revelation is all about talking about what's going to happen with the church itself. And not just the church, but specifically, I think we talked about this last time, maybe this is where we were leading off, we're talking about the Catholic Church specifically. This system makes the book of Revelation prophesy in detail the apostasy of the Roman Catholic Church. I think I mentioned this before. If you go through history and you read about the history of Christianity from the first century on, if you read any secular material, then basically what you are going to find is the path of Christianity is traced from the first century through the history of the Roman Catholic Church. Okay? Everybody following me there? So go look up in encyclopedias, Christianity, all right? And you will find this path that goes from the first century where the Catholic Church claims to be, you know, basically the founder of Christianity. The Pope is the Pope that we have today, is the successor of Peter, who was the first Pope, and there's this continuous succession of Popes all the way, you know, from, so Christianity basically has followed the path of Roman Catholicism. Those who are opposed to Catholicism and so forth would say, you know, they look at that and go, yeah, but the reason that they focus on this is because, well, Roman Catholicism is apostasy. It's not the true church. And so all these bad things that Revelation is talking about the church, it's talking about the Catholic Church. Okay? Well, is the Roman Catholic Church the true church? No. Okay? We have no control over whether secular historians follow the path of Christianity along the path of Roman Catholicism. You have to understand, again, this goes back to looking at, you know, understanding the times and, you know, the historical events and so forth. If you go back and look at it, and I encourage you to do this just from a historical standpoint to get a better understanding of, you know, what's taking place in Christianity. And we're going to talk more about the history of some of these things as we get toward the end of this introductory stuff. As the Roman, as the church developed, what was the power that was in the world at the time? It was Rome.
Rome.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was happening gradually over time, as and Peter and Paul both prophesied, did they not, about the times that were going to come when men would not put up with what?
Sound doctrine.
Sound doctrine, okay? And so we saw early on, in the first century, we saw this apostasy already taking place. Okay? People were falling away from the truth, and were already turning to other doctrines and other teachings and so forth, and so there was this path that became the popular path. Right? As time went on, The Roman government began to accept Christianity. And there were several different reasons why that happened. But they began to acknowledge and accept Christianity as a valid religion, okay, that soon began to become more and more powerful. By the time that Constantine became, when he was emperor of Rome, he became a Christian. And so Christianity became totally and completely accepted by the Roman government. Okay? Now here's one of the things that's really interesting about it. If you look at the structure of the Roman government, okay, we're talking about the governmental structure, which is basically a pyramid style, right? Okay? At the top of that structure is who? Well, his name, but it's the emperor. Okay? Underneath the emperor is who? The Senate. Okay? And underneath the Senate, and then you see this pyramid just keeps getting broader and broader as it goes down, right? Because that's what pyramids do. And then underneath the Senate, you have, I don't remember now the name of it anyway, the proletariat. Okay? So, you know, it just keeps going down to the, you know, spreading out throughout the government. Look at the structure of the Roman Catholic Church. Who's at the top?
Pope.
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 Who's underneath?
Pope.
Cardinals. Who's underneath them? The archbishops and bishops. Who's underneath them? The priests. You see? The Roman Catholic Church's structure of government was set up identical to the structure of the government of Rome.
Government, yeah.
And there came a point in history where, because the church started having so much political influence, right, that there was a point where you could almost not tell the difference between the Roman Catholic Church and the government, right, because the Pope and the Cardinals and the Bishops had so much political power, right, that they were influencing government. And by that time, it was, we're talking about the known world. Right? So, if you look at Catholicism, was there an apostasy there? Absolutely. Okay? But its influence was worldwide. And that's why when you go back and you read about Christianity, the history of Christianity, you follow Roman Catholicism. Because it had that governmental influence worldwide structure. Okay? But we need to understand, that doesn't mean that all of Christianity followed that path, does it? Okay? Remember the words that Jesus told Peter when Peter made his declaration. Okay? When Jesus asked his disciples, who do men say that I am? And they said, what? Some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah, some say one of the prophets. And Jesus said, who do you say I am? Peter said, what? You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus then made a declaration to Peter that you are Simon, he said, and upon this rock I will build my church. Whose church?
His
church. Okay? And then he said what? And the gates of hell will not prevail
against it.
Okay? So, therefore, Catholicism went off in one direction and took much of what was understood to be Christianity at the time, went off in one direction in apostasy, did the church, in its form that Christ had set it up to be, continue to exist throughout all that time? Absolutely. Absolutely it did. Otherwise, what Jesus told Peter would not have been true. And we had to go back into history and try to find the church somewhere and pull it out of all that history. Okay? And you can go back through the history of Christianity and you can find and pull out and extract all these different denominations that have come about, okay, since the first century. But true Christianity, according to what the scriptures teach, has always existed since it was instituted by Christ. So, again, to go back and to say that the book of Revelation is a prophecy about the apostasy of the Catholic Church, while I think there may be some things that we can look at and say, oh, maybe, you know, this or that, I don't think that's what it's really intended to be. Okay? Because certainly there's a lot of things that the scriptures talk about apostasy in general, whether it's the Roman Catholic Church or anybody else. Even those who, again, the importance of its original audience, when John first wrote these letters, the Roman Catholic Church did not exist. So they would not have had any way whatsoever to relate to, you know, this Roman Catholic Church and its apostasy. They did have a way to relate to the whole concept of apostasy in general and what was already taking place. But it had absolutely nothing to do with the Roman Catholic Church. Right,
yeah, I wanted to mention that if you do the math, it was around 568 years before Roman Catholicism and denomination in general even existed, you know, from Christ's establishment of the church in AD 33. In doing math, it was about 560 or 68 years before the denomination even existed at all. Around that time.
Well, you had, I think, the original Council of Nicaea, which was part of the Roman Catholic, as it was developing, was around 325 or something like that, if I remember correctly. Somebody can check me on that, but. But you're right, in terms of all these denominations, because what happened was eventually there came a point where what we know as, you remember your history, the Protestant Reformation, you know, and that's where you start seeing these other groups breaking off from the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah, yeah.
One at the same time, you also saw the Greek Orthodox Church separate from the Roman Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so you have all this breaking away, separating, but we see this apostasy is happening. But again, let's take a look at these different objections. again, it puts Revelation completely out of touch with its original audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have no concept of a Roman Catholic Church and the apostasy that the Roman Catholic Church has done, and you know, the Pope and all that. That concept didn't exist in the first century, so it would have been totally irrelevant to them. It would have had no meaning to those in the world where Rome holds no sway. Now, admittedly so, how much sway did Rome have in the world at that time? Rome was the world, okay?
Yeah.
All right? Because it was the governing power in the world in the first century, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay? But even today, okay, other than political, and I don't care what they do and all that, the Roman Catholic Church has no power, no sway over me.
No.
So if it's all about the Roman Catholic Church, then what's in it for me? What relevance does the Book of Revelation have for me? Other than to tell me that, yeah, they apostatized. Well, I knew that from what Paul and Peter said way back in the first century. They were going to do that. So again, I point out the importance of going back and understanding the original audience and what was going on with them, okay? It leads to calculations of times and periods which have constantly changed throughout history based on events of the time. In other words, what we've seen happen is that people have come along and said, okay, this prophecy right here, this applies to this person, this pope, okay? And he did this, and so this is this. Well, then it comes along, you know, down the road and say, well, we're still going though. Nothing's really changed. Oh, well, it applies to this pope, you know, or this situation, or this teaching, or this apostasy, or this whatever. And they keep trying to plug it in, and the times, you know, it's the guys that stand on the street corner and go, you know, the world's coming to an end today, right? And today the sun comes down, the new day starts, and the world's still here, and you're going, you know, what happened? Well, the world's going to end yesterday. And that's basically a lot of what we've seen happen when it comes to Revelation and interpreting the prophecies that people have placed in specific people and events. And probably one of the most recognized is Adolf Hitler. Okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was, you know, the supreme Antichrist, and the world is coming to an end. You know, this is it. This is, you know, World War II was, you know, the War of Armageddon, and it was all going to be over and so forth. And, you know, we're still going, aren't we?
World War
I
was called the War to End All.
Yeah, you know.
Before we had two, then we could make it one.
But, well, the reason I say it is because, you know, Hitler, because of the evilness of him and what he did, you know, people tend to look at him and they relate to the prophecies and they're going, this is the Antichrist, this is, you know, the son of Satan, and, you know, and so forth. And so there was all that. But again, you know, you got to be careful with trying to plug those specific events and dates in and say, this is the fulfillment of this prophecy, because we're still waiting for it. Okay? Check. Yeah. And you know what? May very well be. Okay? But as we've been talking about throughout our study, when it happens, it happens. Okay? The point that we need to focus on is we got to be ready whenever it comes. This, you know, hey, all this is going to end at some point. But we don't need to be concerned about trying to plug dates, specific dates and people and events into it to try to figure that out and predict, so that we go and make sure we stock up all of our, doomsday preppers. You know, we make sure to get all your big containers of all your food and store it all up as the end is coming. Okay, wait a minute. Okay, if the end is coming, if it's really coming, what do you need all that food for? Okay. Yeah.
He was leaving it behind.
No, I just wanted to say we have to be very, very careful, because Christ is already in the Bible, the scriptures has already told us that no one knows when Christ is going to come back. And we just need to be prepared to with our lives for Christ, and not all this other stuff we're learning about dates, and because man has been trying to deal with dates and and come up with a point when Christ is coming back, and all of them have failed. Right. Every one of them.
Yeah.
And I don't worry about that. All I try to do is do what he said.
I grew up in the 70s when all this was really big too. And that people would take 666 and try to plug it.
Oh, yeah.
And Kissinger was in, Ronald Reagan was. He has six letters in his name.
Oh, it's
and they all say in the Bible, somebody, I guess it was in college, and he says, oh, I doubt you have a revelation in your Bible.
And you know, it's amazing. You can go on and do some Google searches, and you can find where people have taken somebody's name, whether it's Hitler or Stalin or, you know, anybody, and plugged in and figured out all these weird combinations of they have, like you said, this many letters in their names, and there's this many D's and this many X's, or this, you know. And so all of that comes together and it means this.
And then in the mouth
of
the Bible.
You know, if you would spend half of that amount of time really studying the Bible, you might learn something.
Right.
You know? I mean, come on, give me a break, all right? Okay, let me look at these last two here. We're trying to do these last two types of methods of interpretation. The preacherist method here, okay? This method is the complete opposite of the futurist method, and the reason is because basically it is talking about past or beyond. That's what preacherist means. Okay? In other words, this method basically says that the fulfillment of the visions of Revelation has already taken place. It's all already happened. Okay? What could possibly be wrong with that?
Where is he?
Everything. Okay? All right? First of all, again, it finds no relevance for present-day Christians. If it's already all taking place, then what's the point of it for us?
Why are we here?
It has absolutely no meaning for us at all. It's already occurred. All those prophecies have already been fulfilled. We got left behind, folks.
Maybe he's
here. I'm sorry?
Maybe he is here, but he's in all of us.
Well, but when you go back and you're looking at the, he is here, okay? He is here, and he is in all of us, but that doesn't address the concerns of the prophecies and the story and the reason that it was given. Okay? In other words, there are still things that need to take place. Okay? And there's going to be some things that are going to happen. But so to go back and say, well, all this has already happened, he's already come back again, well, again, where is he? And, you know, what happened to all these different things, and when did they occur, and, you know, and so forth. There's a far left wing of this particular group of folks who really have no respect for the book for the Bible being inspired by God. And that's where a lot of the problem with this particular method comes in. They're just basically, you know, really, really out there in kind of anything goes philosophy. All right. The historical background prophetic principle method. All right, let's talk about this. This method keeps in mind that the writer wrote his message primarily for the encouragement and edification of the Christians of his own time. Okay? So, when John wrote this book, he wrote it primarily for who? The Christians in the first century. Okay, that's what this method, what it starts out with. One must make a close study of the church of that day. Okay, the writer, the conditions from which he wrote, etc. Then make application to his own day. Which again, as we started out this morning, what I was saying, we need to do that with any Bible book that we try to interpret and understand. Go back to the original audience, the original author, the original intent, and when you do that, you begin to get a better understanding of what the purpose of that writing was. If you don't understand the purpose of it, then you're not likely to come away with an accurate understanding of what it's all about. Okay? This method keeps in mind that this book is written largely in symbolical language where one must ask two vitally important questions. All right, the first one, what is the picture that is being painted here? Alright, what is the picture being painted? And then secondly, what does that picture mean? Again, keeping it in its context of its original author, its original audience, and its original intent. What was it intended to mean to those people back then? You see, by contrast, these other methods we've been looking at, if you try to take it out and say, okay, wait a minute, this means, this didn't apply to them back there, it applies to us today. Well, right away you've got a problem. Because you're taking it out of its context.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And you're leaving a very vitally important part of it, the understanding, you're leaving it out. Which is going to, in a sense, taint your understanding or interpretation of that, okay? So, when an event or person is found to which the prophecy is fairly applicable, it is considered fulfilled in such an event or person, but look at this, but not thereby exhausted, and you've got to make note of that. Okay? In other words, just because we can look at a particular prophecy, and not just in Revelation, but any of them, and say, okay, yeah, this prophecy was fulfilled here, that does not necessarily mean that that's the only place that prophecy applies. In fact, if you go back and you study Old Testament prophecies, many of the prophecies that you read about are what are referred to as dual application prophecies. They have a prophecy that applies in the immediate time frame or the immediate context, and then they have an application that applies much later on. Okay? So that prophecy may have been fulfilled initially, but then that way it has not been exhausted. In other words, there is still some of that or another application for it to be applied to in the future. Everybody got that? Everybody understand what I'm saying here? Okay? It is intended more for the purpose, look at this, of showing us the forces for good and evil that make history than for the particular or the prediction of particular events. You have got to keep this in mind. Alright? Don't look at the book of Revelation and try to understand it as a book to be able to predict what's going to happen in the future. Instead, look at it as its purpose is showing us, as it says here, the use of the forces for good and evil that make history. That they were living in then, and that we are living in today. All right? Everybody understand that? I'm sorry? I'm saying, first of all, we don't look at the dark forces as literal anyway. It's all prophetic, okay? So in other words, those are symbols, those we've been talking about. So again, keep that in mind, symbolism, okay? If the symbolism, and including the numbers and all the other symbols, are intended to show us a picture, okay? Now that picture, I think we can best understand it as being a picture that shows or depicts something that says, okay, this is what they were going through back then, okay, and this is what evil is happening in the world at their time, and these are the things they need to be trying to do and to live and the way they need to try to survive this and live their life and so forth. And you and I need to do the same thing today. You see? Because were they facing a lot of evil and so forth back then?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Are we facing a lot of evil in the world today?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So does the book of Revelation apply to both?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You see, so you look at it that way rather than going, okay, let's see, back in 1940, you know, Hitler was doing this and this, so that applied to him, so that one's fulfilled, we check that one off, now this one over here, you know, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Look at it in the broad general sense of the picture that is showing. Again, remember, what's the picture and what does it mean? Okay? The picture basically means, go back to our original theme. Remember what that theme is?
I think it's really important too, something you just said, is that we can't check these events off. It's easy to say, okay, Hitler came, but that was checked off. Well, had to check Rwanda, had to check places like Syria. And if history does repeat itself, and that's cliche, but go back and look at the Old Testament, how many times they say, we want a judge, I got a judge. Okay, we got a judge, a king. So these things do happen over and over, and they may not be happening where you are right now. And so that's the important message, is that it's telling you how to get through it.
Well, the wise man Solomon said there is nothing new under the sun. What has already occurred will occur again.
Amen.
You say, Brian, finish us up here.
First of all, I appreciate you giving this lesson to the area. Thank you, church.
Good lesson.
But if you look at it in the context of you saying, the first century church, this was telling me it's going to get worse, but it'll be all right. But when we're going through the same thing as individuals, as a country, or as a world, we now realize what Revelation is true because they made it through it. So when we face the same persecution, we have the understanding with the history that God's proven himself, and it'll be okay because he's proven himself in Revelation.
Exactly. No matter how bad things get, we're going to be all right. Okay, we're out of time. What we're going to do is we're still in introductory material here, by the way. Okay? All right? We'll try to finish that up next week. We're going to specifically go and look at the historical background of the book of Revelation. So we're going to look at what was going on with the recipients, okay, in their lives, the first century Christians. What were the conditions of the Roman Empire at the time? What was the moral conditions that existed in the world at that time, and then what were the religious conditions at that time? We're going to look at all those things. I encourage you, if you've got some time between now and then, you know, get on Google or wherever you do searches over and look up some of that stuff, okay, that will help you to better understand what was going on back then. Why was this so important for them to have back then?